60 years ago today, a giant Pan-American clipper rose off the waters of Long Island Sound and headed east, beginning the first scheduled airline service between the U.S. and Europe. A few days before that first flight, the airline gave reporters a preview. 18 newsmen joined a crew of 12, among them Robert Trout, who began the journey by driving out on a Saturday morning to Long Island.
At 1:30, the 42-ton aircraft came in from the south and dropped into the Sound. Don't be alarmed, clippers in those days were made to land on water, not runways. As it taxied to the dock, I set eyes on the world's largest aircraft close up. The Boeing 314 floated on its belly at the end of a narrow pier. It seemed a monstrous creature, bobbing in the water as it took on 5,000 gallons of fuel. Soon we were on our way. Our first broadcast was at 9 p.m. New York time.
In just a moment, we will join those aboard the Clipper for the first broadcast ever to come from a passenger plane over the Atlantic. Come in, Atlantic Clipper.
It was nearly an hour late, at 54 minutes past the scheduled takeoff time of 3 p.m., that the last goodbye was said and the door swung shut. Green water swirled white as 40 tons of flying ship was hurled through Long Island Sound with the power of two locomotives for exactly 42 seconds. The ship left the surface abruptly. Slowly, we climbed up over the Sound, and the richly carpeted floor of the smoking room and the lounging compartment tilted slightly as we climbed for a long, long time. Below us spread the vast estates of Long Island. Yachts raced madly along the Sound, their spinnakers...
I had peered out the window, trying to spot my own small sailboat, which shared Pan Am's home port down in Manhasset Bay. As we lumbered into the air, we flew just above the water for several minutes, so low that we chipped off part of one ship's mast in our path. When we hit an airspeed of 120 miles an hour, we climbed to a safe altitude of 750 feet, then over the Atlantic up to 8,000 feet. The adventure was underway.
Montauk Point went past beneath the clouds, and at 10 minutes past 5, 1 hour and 15 minutes after we'd left, we passed over Nantucket Lightship, the last sign of a North American continent that we'll see, an hour and a quarter by air. And now we're 420 miles to sea, headed for the Azores in the darkness which lies over Europe.
Out at sea, we chatted, played cards, read the papers, explored the plane, or simply relaxed. Perhaps I relaxed too much. As I described the plane's many amenities, I must confess that I entrapped myself in a broadcaster's worst nightmare. A juxtaposition of words, perfectly innocent on their own, but utterly licentious when joined by a naive newsman. It was all so insidiously subtle, I completely failed to recognize my own indiscretion. It went like this. Of course, there are a great many things of interest in this gigantic
flying ship. This particular broadcast is coming to you now from what the sentimental like to call the bridal suite and what the practical-minded call the tail suite. It's the modernistically furnished...
Neither innocence nor subtlety proved a defense when I returned to New York. My colleague, Ted Husing, told me he practically drove off the road when he heard a bridal suite referred to as a tail suite by the voice of CBS News. My bosses were amused.
We have further news for you in a different part of the ship, in the smoking room amidships, and so we're going to switch you to the voice of George Hicks.
Our second microphone is placed in the smoking room of the Clipper.
Our transatlantic broadcast was momentous enough so that both NBC and CBS suspended their normally fierce competition to carry it simultaneously. Probably the first pool broadcast in radio history. Hicks represented NBC. In 5 years, almost to the day, his description of a German air attack on D-Day would make him famous.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have brought to you the first broadcast ever to come from a passenger plane flying across the Atlantic.
After the program, we gathered in the lounge, where dinner was served on white table linen, as it would be in a fine restaurant. Seafood cocktail, turtle soup, roast beef, potatoes, French pastry, coffee, and champagne. We landed in Lisbon that evening, and all were escorted to a luxury hotel. All, that is, except me. I was escorted to jail. It seemed that my passport lacked a Portuguese visa, an oversight regarded by the local authorities as another insensitive insult by one more ugly American. The next morning, my bosses in New York, already on edge a bit at my bridal suite broadcast, awoke to read in the New York Times, "Reporter jailed." The next morning, my keeper deposited me at the Clipper, looking like a wretched derelict, unwashed, unshaved, and unworthy to be traveling in august company. Fortunately, only a radio microphone awaited me, not a television camera.
"We shall be climbing high over the gigantic Pyrenees Mountains, over the Spanish Peninsula to the Mediterranean, and to our last stop, the French port of Marseille, Monday afternoon."
I spent the final days of June in Paris, enjoying what would be Europe's last summer of peace. Back in America, people would ask how my trip had been. "Fast," I would say, "but not really fun." They seemed surprised, but I prophesied that people would never give up the fun of the surface ships for the speed of the Clippers, which explains why I was never invited to join the International Brotherhood of Prophets. There were other prophets who talked about how transatlantic air service would make the world smaller and war, presumably, less likely. This was a prophecy I did not share. The American Clippers were no match for the German Luftwaffe, which 10 weeks later flew into Poland, proving that a smaller world merely meant easier access to your neighbor's throat.
Veteran broadcaster Robert Trout, he now makes his home on both sides of the Atlantic. He lives in New York and Madrid.